Hey, welcome to the Husey, Ed and Erin podcast. Today I get the honour on my own to interview a legend of Australian entertainment. His name is Hugh Sheridan. Welcome, buddy.
Thank you. Thanks very much. I'm clapping for you, Husey. Who do we need? We don't need anyone else. Husey,
no,
Husey.
It's Hugh and Husey. It's perfect. Now, mate, before we go on, you are doing a massive show at the Sydney Opera House. Fly in for this if you're not in Sydney, because it is going to be amazing. It is. It starts Sydney Opera House October 21. It's Solitary Man. Tickets on sale from 9 a.m. this Monday, 15th of August. You are paying tribute to the legend that is Neil Diamond, mate.
That's right.
Just want to have a play a bit here. This is a bit from you.
Oh yeah, it's a good one. Stay close to me. Don't let me be alone. It's tearing me apart. Come on, bring it on.
Come on.
I was going to sing Red, Red Wine there, along with myself.
You do have an incredible voice.
Oh, thank you. So do you. You've got a great voice for radio.
Yeah, exactly. I was in a lift the other day and someone said, you've got a great face for radio, which is a massive insult. And then you've got to travel like 12 floors with this guy.
And not to mention you're on TV all the time.
Exactly.
I mean, that's just horrific news, isn't it?
It's an insult on about 15 different levels as we traveled that lift. Mate, but you're so young, which shocks me. You've just turned 37, is that right?
Yeah, and it was a real surprise because I actually thought I was turning 38. Genuinely, I've been telling everyone that I was 37 for a year. And then I've got a cousin that's 3 months older than me, and I was doing a show down in Adelaide, another one-man show, and it was his birthday that day, and he came to the show, and he's married with kids and all this stuff, and here I am just sort of, punting around. And I said, you made it, 38. He said, what are you talking about? He's like, I've just turned 37, and I'm just trying to, grip my head around that. And I said, does that mean I'm 36? He said, for 3 more months. And so I only actually was 36 for 3 more months. And then I was wondering whether to redo it and go back and say that I'm like 36 for a year and then just suddenly turn 38. But I've decided to redo 37 because it was a real shocker of a year. So I thought 36 never happened. I'm 37.
Well, mate, the fact is, obviously, I think I've been fairly sure. I'm 51 now, and I've been fairly sure of all those years what age I was. So obviously, you operate on different levels. Mate, I want to take you back. I mean, it's not This Is Your Life, but you have been famous for a long time. Back to the Rafters, 2008 is when that show hit.
Yeah. Well, we started it in 2007. I was still at NIDA, and then everyone in the year auditioned for it, and I think everyone was really shocked that I got the role, actually.
Really? Well, you're a bit of a smart ass, fair to say, or you're a guy who likes to have a good time and you don't like to take life seriously. Have you always been like that?
Yeah, 100%. And when I was at NIDA, we had a teacher there called Tony Knight. I hope he's listening. And he said once in front of the class, I don't think he really liked me very much. In fact, I'm quite certain of that. He was the head of drama, and he said one day, just out of nowhere in our third year, he said, Hugh, you'll never work in film or television. And I just thought, why would you, what's that about? But I didn't really care because I always just assumed that I was going to do theatre because I trained sort of more for theatre anyway because I sang and I did dancing and all that sort of thing. So I was kind of okay with it. But it was a real shock when first job was in a TV show. And then I've got to do any theatre or singing since, not in Australia anyway.
So your first show was Packed the Ruffs, which was massive back when people watched TV watched free-to-air TV in large numbers. So literally
100 years ago.
Yeah, but literally every week, millions of Australians are watching your TV show. So how long between him saying that and you getting that role was there?
Oh, it would have been just a few months, really. I mean, it wasn't long at all. And back, like the tradition with Knight, it was the, you couldn't audition for anything until you finished. But at that time we had a great progressive director of the school, and he said, well, why shouldn't like the kids be auditioning for jobs while they're at school? So why wait? And So me and Jessica Murray, we both got the roles of brother and sister, which was great because we were very close friends anyway, and besties, in fact. So, and we then went on to do it, and we were both so poor. I mean, I worked as a house cleaner because I couldn't hold down a job.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the hours that we had for night.
Yes, like yes,
it's a lot of contact hours, and then you have to see plays or performing plays on weekends and stuff. So I was just working as a house cleaner, and then just like overnight, suddenly it was like everyone knew exactly who I was, which is kind of scary.
Yeah, well, bizarre. So, like, how many years? I mean, night is very hard to get into, isn't it? Like,
so
thousands of people audition, and they only select how many out of the thousands that audition, like, each year?
17 to 20. Yeah.
Wow. It's just. Well, let's start with night. Is that a? Do you have to go back for auditions with one audition, or how many auditions before they say you're in?
I think it was three. I think you had three auditions, and they're big, long days, and you have to prepare a lot of stuff, and then they ask you to prepare something else, and, you know, because they say, oh, we can't really see your humour, so, like, can you do something else? And I don't know. I can't remember the exact piece that they – that's what he said to me. He said, I don't – and it was the same guy. He said, I just don't think you're funny. So, you know, can you do something? And then he chose this piece that I thought was really – gosh, what was it from? It was from this movie. But anyway, I didn't think the piece was funny, but he was talking about, you know, basically how great he was, and so I decided to do it on the toilet. So I walked up and I just pulled down my pants and pulled out a Rolling Stone magazine, and because it was some muso or something, and I did it with my pants down because I thought, well, that'll make it funny.
Yeah, Rob, which is a brave move, though, because, you know, the people who are running it, I imagine, could have gone, this guy is just he's not taking this whole process seriously, and they could have just kicked you out straight away and said, that's it, you're not getting in. But you took that chance, and it worked out. Could you tell at the time it was working out?
Oh, yeah, because I looked around the room and I could see all the other people auditioning going, oh, I wish I'd thought of that. Wish I'd thought of that.
And so were you 18 at that time, or how old were you at that time?
I would have been, about 17 or 18, And I was studying at the Australian Ballet School at the time, and I basically, I hope no one from ballet's listening, but I pretended I had glandular fever for about 3 weeks because the audition process was so full on, and you never knew when they were going to call you in, and so I just decided not to go to school at all because you couldn't go to school and, like, to that school, to the Australian Ballet School. I went to two of, like, the nastiest, but toughest institutions. Like, I'm real glutton.
The most elite institution. Yeah. So the ballet first, how long were you at the ballet school before you swapped over to NIDA?
Oh, just a cheeky couple of years. And then I think eventually, I was always in trouble for talking, and it's a silent art form.
Yes,
and
it feels very serious, ballet, so wouldn't be... So like, there's no room for mucking around, ballet. No,
it's like military school for, like, you know, like artists, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and they just come and scream. They're like, are you a man or are you a ballet dancer? I'm a ballet dancer, You know. It's like, oh, gosh, you know.
So what's
scary.
I'm fascinated by this. What's more stressful, the Australian Ballet School or NIDA? What was the more intense institution?
I think the ballet school is much more intense because you start younger as well and you're away from home.
Yeah.
And so there's
how old were you when you were there? What, 15 or 16?
16, I think, when I got in there. And I would have been 15 when I got in, 16 when I started. And then, and I hadn't done ballet for very long as well. It was just like, it was kind of, to be honest, the only way that I could get out of Adelaide. And Adelaide in the 90s wasn't fantastic. I mean, it's a great city now, but it was really kind of like not.
Yeah, rough. You play footy or, you know,
sort of thing. Pretty much. And so I just had to shut up. And footy was not. I loved footy, but I quit that to do ballet because I realised back then you couldn't get a scholarship to go to a school in Melbourne or Sydney for singing or for acting, which I think you can do now. But
yeah,
if you're a boy, the only way out was to be a dancer. And so
yep.
I decided to, and I really was bad. I had to work really hard. I was like, and I'd done like amateur theatre since I was a kid, but I was always like, you know, in the step clap group, like yeah, on the side when everyone else was like doing the,
yeah,
go, 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 Joseph, you know it. And I'm like just clicking up the back, you know. And so I worked really hard. I left St. Ignatius, went to this other school where I could do ballet like full time, and I studied yep. really hard. I got in.
Again, that was a bit like NIDA. I imagine thousands would audition for that because they're not wasting their time at the Australian Ballet School. So you must have been absolutely elite as like a student, like to start with at least.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know where all that went, but like, I mean, yeah, I used to work very, very hard. And now I was pretty determined. I knew I wanted to be a performer, and I also thought, you know, I grew up watching all those old. Dad loved Frank Sinatra, so like yeah. movies like On the Town or even American in Paris or High Society was a classic that we would always watch. So I always knew that singing, I always imagined that singing, acting and being able to dance meant that you could be a performer and you would be employed, you know.
So, yeah, yeah.
And it's
yeah,
worked well, pretty well.
Oh, it's worked really well. So you like, and you come from humble beginnings, fair to say. So you yes. needed the scholarships to even travel interstate, I imagine, and
totally.
Feed yourself. So you've gone from Australian Ballet to. Do you remember telling the ballet school you're moving over to NIDA, or was that like had you finished at the ballet school before you got to NIDA?
Oh no, I had to tell them. I think they were pretty annoying. I mean, yeah, they probably realised then that I didn't have glandular fever and that I had ulterior motives. There was one teacher that knew, Maggie Wilson, she taught the contemporary, and she just came over one day and she quietly said, I think you should audition for NIDA.
Yeah, right.
I think it's time. I'd always sort of intended to go and do acting, but she's like, I think you should just go now.
Yeah, we don't want to.
It's really not working out.
Right. Yeah. So you get to NIDA and, you know, so you spend a few years there, obviously.
Yeah.
And then, like, you and Jessica audition for Pack to the Rafters. Mm-hmm. So you don't know how these TV shows are go. They can be off air within 3 weeks if no one cares about them. But
yeah.
But instantly it's a massive hit and literally I imagine over 2 million, 3 million Australians are watching it every week.
It was, yeah. Yeah, it was the highest rating show, I think, of all time at that point. And it was
yeah.
and it was just every week. Like, you know, we were really disappointed if it was like less than 2.4 or something. Like, you know.
Now that is the 2.4 now is the highest rating event for the year on television, and it's, yeah. and it's a rugby league or an AFL grand final. They're the
or
only
the Melbourne
shows.
Cup.
Or the Melbourne, even yeah. though the Melbourne Cup doesn't get anything like that anymore. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so yeah, no, it doesn't. So it is
of Peter.
Massive. And so you are a bit of a smart ass, I suppose, but then you're really well known, like almost. Instantly, and how did you deal with that? With people knowing who you are in the streets, everywhere.
I think it was a real struggle for me. Like at the start, I think, and also for Jess, like it was kind of confronting because I didn't even have my driver's license because I'd left home so early.
Yeah,
and Jess didn't either. So we were catching the train out to remember when it used to be schlepping to Epping when you were working on. Channel 7, we had to go a long yep. way out. And then we were shooting in San Suzy, which was like a bus and a train and another bus. And we'd be getting up at like 3 a.m. because you've got to be there by 5.
Yeah.
And it would take 2 hours to get there. And then on the way back, you'd have all these school kids going, can we get photos? Like, because they're watching you on TV. And then
yes.
you're like sitting there and like, you know, like no, this just a kid on a train. And they're like, is that? No, I couldn't. No, it is. Oh, no, it's not. No, and then, but like, you know, we're only a little bit older than them.
So they wouldn't even provide you with a driver or even a cab charge card to get to work?
Eventually they did because I think they could see that it was starting to wear
crazy.
On us. And that show was going mental. And and I think, you know, they'd signed us on. I mean, we were just at NIDA, so they signed you, you know, on for 3 years at about $100 a week.
Yeah.
And then you're locked in. And the show's the highest rating show on the, you know, right. the planet. And then they're like, maybe we should give them a lift.
So you're basically on minimum wage and you're one of the biggest stars in Australia. You've won, like, did you win Logie straight away as most popular actor? What was the first time, like, on, yeah. you know, in that awards night that you won? How old were you?
I would have been, I guess, 18, 19 or something. And I was the most popular new talent.
Yeah.
The Graham Kennedy or something. That's what they call it. Yes.
And were you a party animal back then? Did you make the most of those events, or were you like someone who was disciplined, or would you just go out all night? How'd you go with that stuff?
I think I always had a bit of the Sheridan in me, where you just want to, you know, go and I like even when I went to the Australian Ballet School, I was always like hanging out with the kids that were in their final year when I was in my first year. In fact, I definitely was doing that, and even I. Then I was living with a girl that was a principal ballet dancer, which so the school was on to me. Like, they were like, this kid's not a normal ballet dancer at all. You know, he's hanging out with the company. And same at NIDA, I was a little bit always pushing the envelope. And then when I got to Rafters, I met, you know, George Havardis, and we became best friends, and we were playing best friends. And lunchtime would roll around and we'd probably go and have a couple of wines. I mean, of course, you can't do that anymore. But back in those days, we used to have drinks, you know, like they'd actually bring eskies of drinks every Friday. You know, I'm really glad that I got to experience that side of television before everything became no. And now it's gone even further. It's like, you know, masks and protocol and all that stuff. But back then it used to be like, you know.
So would you do some scenes sort of half-charged, would you, occasionally?
Oh, yeah, the second half of the day. I mean, we'd be falling asleep. And we also did this thing called Naked Surprise, which got us into a bit of a trouble. It didn't actually get us in trouble, kind of once. But it was a thing that these friends of mine, I was living in Elizabeth Bay, and my friend with these English people, like backpackers, I guess, or people that were over here working, and they had this thing from that they'd brought over from Europe called Naked Surprise, where it's like if the doorbell rang and someone's like, oh, I'll just go and get the door, everyone would quickly get naked and just be doing whatever you were doing, but you're all naked. And then the person that comes back into the room is like, oh, my God, oh, what? It's like, and it's sort of just, and it's called Naked Surprise. And anyway, I was telling George about it, so we started doing it at work, like in a scene.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like where you'd leave a scene and then we would walk back in completely naked. We'd do it every, became a tradition. Of course, you can't do that anymore because someone would go to HR and then you would be fired for your life. In fact, you could be cancelled for it. One time we actually did it on a helicopter in Perth.
What?
And we were out there for the Perth Telethon. I feel bad saying it.
Yeah, which is a huge event in Perth. The telethon takes over WA, and it's that everyone tunes in. It's massive.
Yeah, and back then you literally get off the plane, they would hand you like a beer. You know, it was about sort of getting the celebrities as drunk as possible so that they would do the craziest stuff, because they're always like, oh, take off your top. You know, I don't know if they do that anymore, but people would be pledging money for you to take off your top and take off your pants and all this sort of thing. And then one year, the year before, I won't say that actor's name, but someone did it. They did this thing where they just flew back from Bunbury naked in a helicopter. And George,
Right, which is about probably a 20-minute ride, I suppose.
I think it's a bit longer. Yeah. I think it's about an hour and a half.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And the next year, George and I were doing it, and George was like, we've got to do it naked. And so we flew there clothed, and then we were picked up by competition winners. This is about 6 a.m. as well. And I think we were on TV till after midnight, so we hadn't had a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
And then the competition winners that take us to the mall to do the Bunbury thing, like they had champagne in the car and everything. So we're drinking. And then we get back there and George goes, come on, let's just do it. And so we just got completely naked. He was sitting in the front, I was sitting in the back. And it's a real, you want to take a lot of photos, because how often would you be naked in a helicopter? I think helicopter pilot was like, you guys are sickos. And we just thought it was so funny. And then we were back at the telethon, you know, showing everyone the photos. Everyone's like, you guys are so crazy. This is zany. And then I got to the airport the next day and I was like, George, because we'd had the big after party as well. And
he's
like, what, you know, and we were so hungover. And I was like, I've lost my phone. I don't know where my phone is. And I didn't even have a lock on it.
Yeah.
And it was like a BlackBerry, and there was all these naked photos. That's like, I mean, we weren't like, you know, it wasn't like perverted or anything. It was just funny.
Yeah, you're nude on a helicopter. The two of you are just nude on a helicopter.
I mean, I was kind of like horrified, you know, because I remembered calling the publicist at the time and saying, I've lost my phone. She's like, that's all right. She said, is there anything, you know, incriminating? And I said, remember those photos I showed you of us naked on the Channel 7 helicopter? And she was like, okay. Did you have a lock on it? And I'm like, no. And we would... We were like the young big stars at the time.
Stars in Australia.
Yeah, for Channel 7. I just signed on for like as an ambassador for Meyer, and I had a deal with Sony. Like there was a lot of stuff at stake. And
did you ever find the phone? Or?
The phone never showed up, and I would actually really like those photos. And when I thought about it, later, I was like, I think we would have gotten a lot of kudos. I think, you know, a couple of people would have been like, that's disgusting. But I think 90% of the people that watched the show would have said they're really funny and they're really.
Well, obviously that sense of fun bled over on air, and you know, then part of the reason you were so popular. It's like so, and you won a stack of Logies in a row. Did you win every year? What happened there with
every year? In fact, I don't think I'm ever going to go again unless I'm sure I'm going to win, which is probably never again. Not after these stories.
Did you get used to that level of success? Do you know what I mean? So, like, obviously, you're such a high so early.
Boring.
In
boring.
Did it really?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No. I actually, towards the end, I really was like, this is ridiculous. I can't remember. I think the last speech I made was, it was embarrassing. Like, I mean, imagine how Lisa McKean must have felt like back in the day when she was just like, here we go again, you know, and Rove and all those people. It's just like, oh, you get another one. It's sort of like, what about the others?
Yeah.
Only way that I could win another one is if I just hang around long enough, and then they'll be like, oh, we'll give it, you know, like to Alf, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know, if you hang around long enough, you just get one.
And so, like, how many years did Rafters go for you? Is that like?
For me, it was like 4 years. 4 years, but I came back and did one episode in each of the last series, like five and six.
And so, what was next for you then? Where did you go to next after that?
Well, I had already kind of started relocating myself to New York because I wanted to be a jazz singer, and so I'd moved over there, and I would just come back and do Rafters, and then go back to New York and.
Did you like being in New York, where obviously it's the, you know, it's no one knows anyone in New York, and you can just you can just do what you like without people's, you know, obviously Aussies see you over there and you're like a kangaroo jumper down the street, and they would get photos with you all the time, I imagine. But generally, did you find that you preferred that life than the life in Australia?
Yeah, definitely. I think Michael Caton said it really well once when we were just starting out and. We were just kids, and he could just see it on our faces, and he said, it's funny, isn't it? He said, when you're a young actor and you're, like, just starting out and you're at uni and all that sort of thing, you just want to work and, like, for people to know you and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But once you become famous, you tend to spend most of your time with your head down and a cap on or whatever, and you're sort of like, you're just hiding.
Mate, I've always embraced being well-known, and I still do. So I'm very happy to say hello to people. So I differ.
I do love saying hello to people, but also I think, you know, there's a, you know, but you want to go to like Woolies and stuff and just, like, you know.
Well, sometimes people look at me and go, well, what's wrong? What's your problem? Like, because I've got a resting face that looks like I'm sad, I think so. But I'm not generally, I'm just preoccupied.
I get that too, actually. People sometimes come up to me and say, are you okay? You know, are you all right? And they know who you are. And sometimes they even get messages like on Instagram and stuff. And I'm like, they're like, I just hope you're okay. And I'm just like, oh, gosh.
So, mate, you have spent a lot of time in America. How many years have you spent in America?
I've been living there for 10 years now. And so, but I do come back a lot, obviously. So after that, I came back and started doing things like the In Excess bio thing and what did I do? House Husbands and a few films here and there, like just over here. But I would go back over there and work as a singer, basically.
Did you have you spent most of your time in New York or LA when you're in America? Where do you where or other places? Where do you where's your you've been home over there?
Now I'm in LA.
Sorry. Yeah. So what's the LA experience like? I mean, you've obviously you're a working actor, you're a performer. Like, do you, you know, is there an Australian sort of club in LA where you hang out with other Australians? Is that something?
No, well, no, I think most people are really sick of Australians in LA now because it's...
Are they?
Well, it's become like the, it's the number one, you know how they always say that Melbourne's like the largest group of Greeks outside of Athens?
Yeah.
Well, that's true for LA now. It used to be London, but now it's Los Angeles, and there's Australians everywhere there. And I think it's great because when I first moved there, like, couldn't get a decent coffee. Like, there was only two places, and yep. the restaurants were all from the 90s. Now it's like a like foodie hub, and so many Australian chefs have moved over there and made great success and great bars and lots of – and it's
like Curtis Stone and those guys? Is
yeah,
that, is
yeah, yeah,
LA?
Yeah, all of them. And there's, like, there's brothers and – yeah, there's – I can't remember the names, but they're all lovely and they have really great places. But it's there are a lot of Australians over there. So I do see a lot of Australians, but there's no – they used to say there's all this Australian mafia, which I wasn't a part of because they were all from Home and Away. So
yeah, right.
And they weren't fans of the Rafters, so I was never involved. But now it's – yeah, they're everywhere.
So with the being Australian –
and the breeding –
yeah,
and interbreeding, but, marrying Americans.
Yeah, right. So with the you being Australian in LA, like going to auditions and stuff, is being Australian was it a positive for you, or did you have to sometimes pretend you weren't Australian, all that sort of stuff?
I think it had moved to a negative by the time I got there. I think, you know, all the Australians had already gotten all the jobs, and people were a bit over it. But yeah. it wasn't for me. I just wanted to sing. You know, I just wanted to, and I really loved America because I could do jazz there, and that's what I wanted to do was jazz.
And where would you? So you would tour as a singer? What would you do?
No, I have a residency there at a club called Vibrato, which is Herb Alpert's place, and now I've just started branching out to other places. But when you performed there, like I remember the first time I went there, I saw Tom Jones. And it's a small club and, like, a lot of great singers there. Even, like, Seth MacFarlane goes and performs there as well.
Yeah,
and,
wow. And so from family. Oh, he's a legend. I love Seth MacFarlane. Yeah, so Family Guy's one of my favourite, you know, like animated thing. I just love that. The kids are getting into it now, which is fantastic. Yeah, it's so funny. It's a bit...
It's a bit out there for the kids. But
it's subversive. It's like my wife said, they can't... My son got onto it at about the age of 10, I reckon. Ooh. And I was... Well, I'd say that's inappropriate. You shouldn't be like that. But, you know, but now my daughters have just got on there at 9 and 11. So what's it? So did you hang out with...
Stu is highly inappropriate, but I'm sure most of it goes over their heads.
Yeah. So would you hang out with Seth MacFarlane or you just see him there? Or
yeah. Well, I mean, that was the place, you know. Like anyone could come in at any point, like Tony Bennett or something. And
what? Tom Jones and Tony Bennett just playing in a small club in front of what, 100 people or...?
Well, they could probably fit in a couple of hundred maybe, but it's like it's very intimate and it's sort of like table seating, but they've got an upstairs as well. And I remember walking in there and I was like, this is where I want to perform, you know, this, because it really is the number one. It's probably the number one in America now.
What's it called again? What's the name of it?
It's called Vibrato. It's in Bel Air and it's sort of like it's a beautiful restaurant and you can hear great music any night of the week. And literally within, I'd say, a month, I got my residency there. I sort of got a little break there just within a couple of weeks where I just got a spot singing with someone else just coming on and doing a couple of numbers. And the owner's daughter came up and said, would you like to have one show here, like as a test? And so I just called everyone I knew, like everyone. Yep. And put in a lot of money and got a big band together. And also the musos are incredible because you're just like hanging out with them and they're like, and I'm like, did you have a gig last night? And they're like, oh, yeah, I was playing with Stevie Wonder in Downtown. And it's like, oh, okay. So, I don't know. You know,
so that is a huge thing to get then, isn't it? You're like, you were to come from your background, which is, you know, obviously you focused on acting for a long time, but to get a residency like that would be, there would be other musos looking at you going, what, you know, this, I mean, not, you know, like that, it's something that people would kill for, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's how you get all your cred, you know. It was like, well, I got a lot of cred from having that, and then... And then I started a band over there and called the California Crooners Club, where I'd get like I had rappers come in and work, and we would take songs like from Bruno Mars or Frank Sinatra, or we'd mix them all together and just create this weird sound, and everyone loved it. So, and then we started gigging at like big things like Gwyneth Paltrow's wedding or Eli Broad's birthday.
Hang on, Gwyneth Paltrow's wedding?
Yeah, yeah.
You gigged at Gwyneth Paltrow's wedding?
Yeah, it was, and we were like the thing. Like it was, you know, what? they had another band like singing all through the thing. We're the main act. So
all right. So I'm not. I know that Gwyneth Paltrow was married to the guy from Coldplay. Was this her next wedding, or
this
was it
her next one? Yeah, the guy from Coldplay wasn't there.
And so, what? So I mean, I imagine at Gwyneth Paltrow's wedding, there's a number of big stars in the room. Oh, would that be right?
Everyone was there. Yeah, like Oprah and.
What?
It was put together by Ryan Murphy, who was actually the person that sort of got me the job.
What? So you are on stage, and all these icons of world entertainment are dancing in front of you.
Do you know what was really funny? Actually, this guy came up to me, and he was sort of had a gentle handshake, you might say. You know, when you shake someone's hand, it's sort of like a bit like.
Yeah, a bit. I won't say use the word limp, but it was a bit soft. Yeah, well, yeah.
I won't say that.
No, I don't want to use that word.
Well, you're a very famous person, yes. So I just don't want to upset anyone. But it turned out to be someone very famous, and they were very complimentary, and I was sort of trying to get away. And then I was at the bar next to Gwyneth, and we were chatting, and she was saying, "Thank you so much." And that was actually the first time that I'd met Edwards that night. Yeah. And, then he appeared on the other side and started talking to me again. I thought, this guy's just following me around. And then my friend said, Tom Ford is just following you around. And I was like,
what?
Tom Ford?
Yeah, he's
amazing. I could have got like maybe a pair of sunglasses at best, maybe a suit even. Like a pair of sunnies would have been great. But I was just like trying to dodge, you know, get over and chat to someone else. I don't know. I wanted to talk to like Kate Hudson or something.
What? Kate Hudson was there?
She sang. She sang and she wasn't going to sing. And then I went and talked to her and sort of said, no, you've got to sing. Because I'd met her at the rehearsal. We had a rehearsal the day before.
Oh, mate, your life is incredible. We can't talk for much longer, but we need to do 15 podcasts, man.
Yeah. Oh, let's get started. I mean, come on.
Oh,
put me on the show.
I won't put you on the show.
Put me on the show.
Mate, you're a superstar. We've got to get going now, but this is just a taste. We will have a second go of you if you're around, man. You're going to be around in October, definitely, because Neil Diamond premiering, so Hugh, Solitary Man, Neil Diamond's, you sing the Neil Diamond song.
Yep.
It's at the Sydney Opera House on October 21. Tickets on sale from 9 a.m. this Monday. Mate, your life's only just begun as well. There's so much more to go.
You've only just begun. Also, I'm doing a play up in Brisbane just after that called A Normal Heart for a beautiful theatre company up there. Called Astra. It's at Astra, actually. I think I asked them to send me the dates. But it's like right after that. And it's for World AIDS Day. And it's opening on Thursday the 3rd. 3rd of November.
All right, A Normal Heart. So Google that, Hugh Sheridan. Mate, thanks for your time. It's just we've scratched the surface with you. There's so much more we could talk about, and we will next time. Good on you, buddy.
Scratch and sniff.